Okay, great. My name is Mike Senyu, and I'm joined by GLOW, who many of you that work with HMTRI and our annual grantee meeting is very familiar with. We're a consortia. We've been working, we work with EPA under a cooperative agreement. We've been doing this since about 1988, so we've since the beginning of Brownfield's job training. What we're doing on these 30-minute conversations, we do these every 2 weeks, and we have cycles of 10. We call them professional learning community calls. Like we call them PLC. And it's just an opportunity for everyone to get together and network ask questions, get some ideas, find out what other people are doing that you might be doing, maybe explore some new ideas. And a long time ago, we used to hold workshops, but this just works a lot better because you can just get to a phone and spend 30 minutes, and you're there. Someone just joined us.
It's Sarah Mackey from the Keweenaw Bay Indian Community.
Great, great. So we usually start these out with news from Washington. And GLOW, do you want to anything new happening in Washington?
Yeah, actually a little bit. I talked to Joe Bruss this morning at headquarters, and he said that they anticipate, with a heavy emphasis on the word anticipate, making the announcement for the new job training grants next week. So that's a little sooner than what we had expected. That's a good thing. But again, he did say, underline the word anticipate, so they're hoping. And he also wanted me to mention that if an organization that submitted a proposal is not selected, to please contact your regional job training coordinator and request a debriefing. Many times, it's rare, isn't it, Mike, that the first time someone submits a proposal, they are granted. So it's very important that you get debriefed on what you could do better the next time around.
Right. Someone just joined us while GLOW was introducing that.
Christine
Anyone?
Campbell, Clover Park Technical College, Lakewood, Washington.
Hey, Christine, how are you? One of the objectives of this, we have mentors like Christine who have excellent, incredible programs. We have people who have applied for grants for the first time. We've got people who have never applied for a grant and are thinking of maybe doing it in their community. And we've got people who are just interested in finding out what job training is all about, and particularly environmental job training. People who have job training programs that might be similar to what we're doing and want to sit in and listen to what we're doing. So the whole idea is get a mix of people, and the whole idea is peer-to-peer learning. We kind of learn from each other, and it's really important that our mentors, which we have many on the call, can contribute, and they work with us to answer questions, and sometimes we learn from each other. It's something that someone else is doing that we're not doing, and hopefully we make contacts with other people during the process of the calls. As I said, we send everyone post-session notes, and we also are putting everyone on our listserv so that they'll get announcements. And the whole idea is let's just do network, exchange communications and ideas. So sometimes for the mentors, some of these things are repetitive, but then also sometimes there's little bits of information that are helpful to the new grantees as well as some of the old grantees. And when I say grantees, this is the EPA job training program that we often talk about, but there's many others. But we're in cooperative agreement with EPA, and every year they have a $200,000 grant, and we're about to, someone just joined. Would you like to introduce yourself? Okay. The next round, this is annual, the next round will be being announced very shortly, and then there will be another round that will be the end of next year, the end of this year or the beginning of next year. Usually they aim for November to February timeframe, where they'll have a new RFP for the next round of job training grants. But in between, it's important that people get started on developing their programs. Many have programs already in place, and many are just looking at alliances and then partners. And we kind of by sitting in on PLC, you could get an idea of what's involved in setting up one of these job training programs. We also usually announce different grant opportunities that are available. Because I'd like Pam and Scott to present their program today, and it's a great program, I'm going to just put those in the notes. We've mentioned them before. The National Park Service has a youth development program and with 40 grants, and the Employment and Training Agency also, administration also has a Women and Apprentice program for non-traditional occupations. And we put those in the post-session notes, and you can look at them, and you may want to check them out to see if you have a peripheral interest in that. You may want to apply for one of those programs. Today, we're going to talk to the Energy Coordinating Agency, and they've been on our calls before. A really interesting agency. They're not in the EPA job training, environmental development job training program, but they've built up an incredible program in Philadelphia, and Pam Carencio and Scott Coleman are going to tell us about how they got started and what their program's involved. And this is important because you don't necessarily academic programs and universities are oriented towards if you get the grant, you do the program, and then you lose the grant and the program evaporates. The job training programs that we're trying to get started and EPA would like to get started are those who the programs may be going and they want to add on this program, or they're developing a new program and they want to get involved in environmental job training. But you don't necessarily have to have the EPA money as a starting point or as an ending point or a midpoint. It could be a supplemental grant that could be used, but there's a lot of work you can do outside of EPA funding. And to the extent that our stars have started with some EPA funding, but then have gone on and got lots of other funding in other places. And other agencies, like in JFY in Boston, had funding before they worked with EPA. They worked with EPA for many years and got four or five grants through EPA, and then now they're off doing other things with other monies in the job training arena. So, Pam, with that, I'm going to turn it over to you and Scott, and tell us about what you're doing up there and how you got started and what you're up to.
Thank you so much, Mike. We really appreciate the opportunity to present our program. I'm going to give you a little background and then turn it over to Scott Coleman, who's our Director of Training. My role is Director of Planning and Development. ECA was established in 1984 in response to the energy poverty problem in Philadelphia. What was happening was there were different streams of bill payment assistance, LIHEAP and other programs. Nobody was looking at coordinating those and making sure families were getting the different kinds of assistance that were available to them. So we started out with that as a mission, but very quickly changed to weatherizing the homes so that we were reducing the energy usage, not just throwing money at the bill arrearage. We're now based in a 58,000 square foot building in a Latino neighborhood that was actually the base of a factory where Civil War uniforms were made. We've renovated the building to the LEED Gold standard, and we're running our conservation program from the first floor, and the training center encompasses the whole second floor. Our major programs are conservation assistance, mainly the weatherization assistance program, heater repair and replacement for low-income families, water conservation for low-income families, and our roots in the community are in 14 neighborhood energy centers that are located in every low-income zip code in Philadelphia. People can go to these centers for intake for all of our programs. We also do a lot of public education on energy and water conservation. And they do up to 200 workshops a year in different, they're mostly in Philadelphia, some in the region. our low-income programs are focused on Philadelphia, but we also do market rate programs in the region when funding is available, particularly for residential weatherization. We started in 2000, the early 2000s, wanting to train our staff and bring everybody's skills higher and higher so that we would save more energy. And we actually became a BPI affiliate in 2008, and so we were training more than our staff beyond, you know, from that point onward. At that point, we'd already purchased this building, but the second floor was not renovated. And then when we realized the demand, just because of the size of this metropolitan area, we realized we need a training center, and we were committed to making that happen. We opened the Knight Training Center in 2010. By 2012, our city council had authorized it as a center of excellence in the city. And then last year, the Interstate Renewable Energy Council actually accredited ECA's training center, one of the first in the country accredited to the DOE credential. And Scott Coleman is going to explain that accreditation process to you in more detail. And then we were really delighted also at the end of 2013, IREC named our center the training program of the year. And we really loved it because they call it the 3I Award, which is innovation, ingenuity, and inspiration. So that was a great honor. We are trying to answer some of the questions that Gwal and Mike directed us to. So I'm going to turn it over to Scott to talk about how we operate and how we partner.
Hi, everyone. My name is Scott. I'm the Director of Training at ECA. I will do my best to avoid using acronyms. If I say anything that you guys are not familiar with, please stop me and I'll explain it in English to you guys. But to get started, I guess, this topic is kind of how we operate, how we partner and leverage resources. So to that end, from a macro perspective, we serve a full spectrum of candidates, from high school students, reentry students, trainees, all the way through certified energy managers, mechanical and electrical engineers, architects, and everywhere in between. And I'll touch on that later, but really looking at that full spectrum is what guides us strategically. Our fundamental principle here, and one of the things that makes us unique in our world at least, energy efficiency, is our contextual teaching and learning model. We've been much more successful in working with underrepresented groups, minorities, women, English as a second language students. We've been significantly higher than the national average in getting people certified through the Building Performance Institute and a variety of certifications. That could be building analyst, installer technician, multifamily building operator. Those are a few examples. But our rates are significantly higher than the national rates, and we work with a much more, most people would say, challenging population. One of the major keys to our success is that contextual teaching and learning model. So in the renovation that Pam referred to, the idea was, since we're going to invest this kind of money into the building to bring it up to LEED Gold, we wanted it to be a living lab. We wanted this building to actually implement and utilize all or as many of the techniques that we teach and train so that students could not only be able to learn the theory in the classroom or, you know, do some simulated work, hands-on work in a, you know, tabletop using mock-ups, but they can actually get hands-on experience using equipment that they will see out in the field, and, you know, functioning equipment. And, you know, using that model, giving them the theory, reinforcing it with the hands-on true contextual learning, and then reinforcing the theory again has been one of the reasons why we've been able to get students through very difficult programming where, you know, as you'll see later, one of our partners, the Community College of Philadelphia, sent us a group of students who were all toward the end of their associate's degree, and we just tested for them. Their pass rate was lower than a group that we were getting grant money for that were displaced or reentry workers. So, you know, that's just to give you an idea of the ability that we have to work with non-traditional students. Another big key to that success is that our workforce here at the training center and at ECA in general reflects that diversity as well. So we have a diverse teaching base. We have a diverse set of employees here. So when people come in, they're comfortable, and that's anyone. You know, our goal is really to make anyone feel comfortable in this environment so that they are free to pursue whatever they find most engaging or appealing to them. And then, okay, so moving on to one of our next big sort of tentpole philosophies here at the training center is that we've developed and we are now running a continuum of learning. And that's done with partnering with organizations to serve trainees from high school all the way through degree attainment. So in other words, we have a high school pre-apprenticeship program. We work with juniors and seniors from the Philadelphia School District doing training for at least a semester, sometimes a full year. They walk away with multiple national certifications. They're stackable and portable. But we have a strong relationship with CCP. I'm on their Applied Studies Advisory Committee.
Community College of Philadelphia.
There you go, acronym. Sorry, one flip in there. And we've negotiated a block credit agreement with them. So students who come through ECA and take coursework here can receive up to 18 credits at the community college. So for students that are coming into a world where they feel intimidated in the college setting, just by going through the ECA training, they can come in with more than a quarter of the credits they need to graduate. And then from that point, we are working with the University of Pennsylvania and Drexel as a four-year partner. So, you know, for example, students who come here, receive training, go to CCP and study construction management or building science, something along those lines. And at any point, they are qualified to go get work. But if they would like to continue their education, it's all portable throughout this continuum we've created so that they're not taking two steps back to take three steps forward. We want to make sure that they're always moving forward. So that's one of the key reasons that we've developed this continuum and really fostered these partnerships. Just quickly to talk about some of the other partnerships, I mentioned the school district, the Community College of Philadelphia, the local workforce system. In Philadelphia, the Workforce Investment Board and the One Stops are combined into one entity called Philadelphia Works. I actually used to work there for 3 years. So my background prior to ECA was in workforce development. And I'm very familiar with all of the incentives, the subsidies, the programs, They have, in Philadelphia, we call the One Stops Career Links. There's 5 career links throughout the city that do TAVE assessment for us, that will do placement for us, that will pre-screen and recruit for us. So that's been a very valuable relationship for us as well. And finally, in terms of leveraging, our relationship with CCP is not only bear fruit in terms of allowing students to go there with credits under their belt, but in terms of ECA's sustainability and training, we've been able to get 2 large, significant grants from CCP to deliver services. One was the Pathways Out of Poverty grant, which was an ARA grant for several $1 million, and the second is current and ongoing, and that's the trade adjustment.
Thank you.
The passive grant.
What was that second grant again? Someone's on speakerphone. Could you?
The second grant is passive. Depending on who you ask, there's 2 A's, but it's the trade adjustment assistance college training act. They changed its acronym. They've been through 4 acronyms. So right now they're using TACT. Well, if you remember, the president in his State of the Union talked about the need for community colleges to become more adept at offering technical and vocational training, so that students coming out are better suited to better matches for the jobs that are available. And this is part of that movement led by President Obama. So I think over the last 3 years, and they're about to announce the next round, it's been over $400 million nationwide that's been dispersed to community colleges throughout the nation to focus on different industries, but very specifically targeted to train people in technical and vocational skills. Yeah, sure. And then just quickly, we'll move on from this section. One other partnership we wanted to discuss is with a group called Connection Training Services. They're one of the 2 Youth Build programs in the city of Philadelphia. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Youth Build program, but that's a Department of Labor program for youth ages 18 to 24 that did not complete high school. So the primary goal for the Youth Build program is to get students their GED, but simultaneously they are to be training in nationally recognized technical skills, so that when they finish the program, they not only have their high school diploma or GED, but they have national credentials so that they can go look for work, or get work, as it were. And we've been working with them now, delivering training to that youth for 3 years. And from that relationship, we've expanded our programming for them to work with a reentry group that they won another grant from the Department of Labor for. And we're training them to do essentially installer weatherization, air sealing and insulation, and plumbing certification, sort of a plumbing level 1 or introduction to plumbing, training them to be plumber's assistants, essentially.
So we focus on our core expertise, which is the technical training, and our partners very often will do the soft skills training.
Right. And in Philadelphia, especially with my background, the workforce development background, there is a plethora, and I think that's putting it kindly, of organizations that do what we call soft skills training and case management. Because there are so many that exist that are entrenched and well-funded, we made the strategic choice to not reinvent the wheel or duplicate services that are being offered at a high quality level and already funded. So really, we, as Pam just mentioned, try to focus on developing world-class curriculum, world-class methods of instruction and pedagogical techniques, and then really rely on selecting the ideal partners to make sure that from recruitment through placement or retention, our students are being served in the best manner possible. And so moving on to the next section that you guys sent over, curriculum certificates and certifications. Just briefly, I'm going to touch on the IREC accreditation that Pam mentioned. IREC is the Interstate Renewable Energy Council, and they were selected by the Department of Energy to accredit training centers in renewable energy and energy efficiency. Based on very, very detailed job task analyses. And in the energy efficiency world, there are four. There's the energy auditor, or the building auditor. There's the crew chief or crew leader. There's a quality control inspector. And there's a retrofit installer technician. So in order to offer these trainings that are now required by DOE for the weatherization assistance program, you must be IREC accredited. And we were really early to that accreditation. We were the first in the state, really the first in the region. Pam mentioned we won the training program of the year last year. So we are uniquely positioned to serve Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, parts of New York State to offer these higher level certifications, and they're called the Home Energy Professional Certifications.
And part of this strategy is, one, we always want to be saving more energy for the people we're serving, and also, one, we want everybody we train to have nationally recognized credentials that are stackable and portable, to use the jargon, so that when our trainees go anywhere, their credentials will still have the weight to make them more marketable in the job market.
And just quickly to run through some of the other trainings that we deliver, Building Performance Institute, which is really the gold standard in terms of certification in the energy efficiency industry. We are one of the highest volume training and certification centers in the country. We do professional development for educators. That could be high school teachers, elementary school teachers, administrators, school district officials, higher education, faculty and staff, and that's something that's been very successful thus far. We also offer for NCCER curriculum, which is National Center for Construction and Education Research. So a lot of the Department of Labor grants require NCCER certification as one of the deliverables. And NCCER certifies in everything from carpentry through plumbing through electrical, and they have various levels. And we focus primarily on the entry-level stuff. But that's a newer certification that we offer, but has been very useful. And finally is really environmental and safety. And, you know, we currently offer and run quite frequently EPA renovation, repair, and painting, the EPA lead course, lead safety, OSHA 10 and 30. We have run HAZLOPR. We'd love to do some more. And we're going to get to that really quickly. But we have the ability, the staff, and the facility to offer as well. Go ahead.
Dave Hagler from Pathways. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, could you sure.
Hello?
Could you repeat?
Yeah, please. Yeah, the question I have, how do you do on retention of your students? And how many do you, like, per cohort, how many do you retain?
You know, obviously there's a lot of moving pieces in that equation, depending on the length of the course. Obviously retention is more of a challenge. So we do everything from one-day courses like, you know, EPA, RRP, through our weatherization and retrofit course, which is 196 hours and can be customized to be even longer. To give you guys an idea, Youth Build is probably our longest-running program. It starts in about October and graduates in July. Retention-wise, we started out with slightly under 40. I believe it was 38 students, and right now we have 35. So over the last 7 months or so, we've only lost 2 students.
Something that Scott learned is this year he was involved in the final selection of the Youth Build candidates, and just his active involvement at a certain point in the selection process really helped. So the students could really see what the program was about and whether it was a fit for them. And the kids
That's awesome.
Were amazing, very focused.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a technique that I've found useful going back to my workforce development days. You know, we called it the workforce development training carousel. But so often you would see people coming in, dislocated workers coming in that would go receive training and either not be able to get a job that aligned with that training or be forced to take a minimum wage job somewhere else. And we'd see them come back in 4 months later looking for new training. So we tried to stop that vicious cycle, the carousel, if you will, by ensuring that we train people to industry standards. We're always meeting with, discussing with employers, make sure that we are training and graduating students with the skills that they are looking for.
So as a requirement, do you have, so if I come in, say if I'm coming as a dislocated worker and I'm just looking to get my hazmat and maybe lead abatement, do you guys just do those courses? They don't necessarily have to go through a continuum of courses in order for them?
Absolutely not. We do fee-for-service. Or, you know, in that situation, it would kind of be contractual / fee-for-service. But, yes, they could do one-day courses. They could sign up for a series of courses. But we don't require that they go through, you know, a year worth of programming in order to get their, lead dust safety, lead dust sampling technician certification or, you know, lead safety.
We market a lot to incumbents so that we can, on an ongoing basis, do EPA lead, RRP, and other trainings that everybody working in the region needs in order to run their business.
Right, and the lead dust sampling technician is a great example of that because we are involved in policy as well. We were aware that the city of Philadelphia was going to require by legislation, require that any properties that were changing hands that had the expected use of children under 8, I believe it is, Pam,
mm-hmm.
had to have the property certified as lead safe. The only people that can do that certification are EPA certified lead dust sampling technicians. So when this legislation passed, we had everyone from realtors, home inspectors, contractors coming through for this one-day course so they could either do it for their own properties or, you know, enhance their resumes, add value to their employers. So we really do, we have a kind of an open service model where depending on who the party is or customer is, you know, we have a different menu, if you will.
Scott, could you wrap up and, like, talk about
sure.
current strategies?
Sure. So right now, you know, our current strategy is to focus on this home energy professional through IREC, because there is a drastic need to get people certified quickly in this area. The Weatherization Assistance Program received a huge cut in funding after ERA, but the funding nationally is now creeping back up to where it was pre-ERA. For an example, Pennsylvania this year over last year increased fivefold. And in order for any of these providers through the weatherization program to close out a home and invoice, they must have the home inspected by an IREC HEP certified quality control inspector. So because we're the only game in town, as you guys can imagine, the demand for that training is very high, and we've really been focusing on that right now, and that's really our short to medium term focus, because over the next 2 to 3 years, the Department of Energy will implement the other three job tasks or job titles into the program and make them requirements. The other part of our strategy is really based around policy and external market drivers. And fortunately for this call, EPA happens to be one of them. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the 111D legislation that hopefully will be passed sometime before President Obama leaves office. We met with one of the directors from the EPA DC office and all of the local EPA folks, and had a good discussion about it. And really the focus of that is going to be to force states to address climate change. And one of the acceptable and allowable ways to do that will be through energy efficiency. So in order to ensure that we are able to capitalize on this pending, hopefully upcoming legislation, we're putting together the infrastructure now to be able to deliver it to the specs that would be required for that grant. And the other one, just real quick, that I'll touch on is the Public Utility Commission in Pennsylvania, which oversees the utilities, also passed legislation called Act 129 that requires them to reduce usage. So in order to do that, most of the utilities, the Exelons, the large utilities, the gas companies, have all developed programs that are very similar to the Weatherization Assistance Program. Most of them are geared at high use users that often can't pay the bill or have to rely on the bill payment assistance. And their standards are as high, if not higher, than the Department of Energy standards. So between the Department of Energy, the Department of Labor, EPA, and the state driving legislation, we are really focused on serving that need. And then if you just look at our, I guess, short to medium-term planning and medium-term strategic goal is really to get more into and leverage more our partnerships in the commercial and manufacturing spaces. And that's where a grant like the EPA Workforce Development Grant would be great for us. We have strong relationships with groups like the Manufacturers Alliance of Philadelphia, which is a group of over 65 small and medium manufacturers. We're working and speaking with the Public Housing Authority of Philadelphia. There are a lot of commercial opportunities that are not being addressed by anyone currently. So just to give you guys a quick example, there's a job that hasn't, I think, been recognized by the Department of Labor yet, but an energy servicing company like Johnson's Control or Siemens, there's a large company in our region called Tozor. And ourselves in the community college have been speaking with Tozor about developing a curriculum for a position they're calling Building Automated Systems Technician. And right now they're paying headhunters $15,000 in addition to a $75,000 starting salary for these individuals. And really what they are traditional facility management people with some newer technology or software skills. That's really about remote monitoring, sensoring, continuous commissioning on site. So when you have these large companies that are remotely controlling and trying to maximize the efficiency of large skyscrapers, you need people on site that can do troubleshooting and maintenance. And that's one of the big growth areas that we see, because there just aren't people that have the skill set right now to meet the demand. And we have some tips for new programs, but we ran a little long, so wanted to turn it back over to you guys for Q&A.
You know, it's really interesting, the discussion you've had, that, and I see why you've been in business since 1984. This is a really good presentation on what it takes to become a sustainable job training program. While you're not specifically working on an EPA, you know, environmental job training grant specifically at this time, which you could easily do, but you've worked with Department of Energy, you're working with Department of Labor, you're working with incumbent workers, you're working with community colleges, and you're getting funds from all these sources and leveraging them, and you're even doing for fee training. And then, you know, you're incorporating this into this gigantic training center, and you could easily add on these appendages, bring them in and out. You could easily, I could see how your program could be easily developed into an environmental workforce development job training program, because you've already got these other things going on. You've got your infrastructure set up. You're bringing in funds from different places. If one of these gets cut off, or as you probably you've mentioned they have, you've got these other sources of income that are sustaining you. It's really a great model.
Yeah, you know, we learned, I think, through experience that after ERA, we had to diversify our portfolio, if you will. You know, we lost a very substantial Department of Energy contract that was we were co-awardees with Penn State University, and Penn State did not exactly deliver on their scope of work. So as a result, we, you know, the second year of the program was not picked up. That was almost $750,000, and losing that kind of money, and that was right when I came in, really made me look at the way that we modeled our business. We cannot be beholden to any one group if, like you said, we want to be around for another 30 years. And that really is the goal.
Any questions that anyone might have?
I heard
Mike,
you say...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm Dave Hagler from Pathways, Richmond, Virginia. I remember you talking about the building that when you first started, and it was a renovating old Civil War factory.
Yeah, the building's over 150 years old. It was the Keystone Dyeing Company, and they manufactured uniforms and some ammunition for...
But the question I had, really what I was getting at is that, did you start out as a not-for-profit? And if so, where did you get the money? Where did the funding come from for the renovations of the building?
Okay. We are a non-profit.
We're a 501c3.
And
I'm sorry.
We had bought the building back in 04 because we really needed a warehouse for our conservation crews. We had been renting spaces and, you know, we're an old northeastern urban center. Warehouses traditionally are in really poor repair. We had some bad experiences as a tenant, so we snapped this building up in 04. We had been talking with the Knight Foundation, K-N-I-G-H-T. We knew that there was a fit, but we didn't know what it was, so we talked to them over, like, about 2 years. And finally, when the board made the decision, we need to start a bona fide training center. We did an update meeting with Knight, and they said, that's it. That's what we want to fund. Mm-hmm. And we put a proposal together, and they gave us a lead gift of $1 million to
awesome.
Renovate the training center. And then the Kresge Foundation gave us a challenge grant of $240,000 to help complete. And we had to meet that twice. You know, so we had to match it twice. And
okay.
that was fantastic. That really drove the other support that we needed.
Awesome.
So to give you a sense, we have inside of our training center, we have a full-size mock house with all working appliances, venting, everything you can imagine. It's been authorized by the Department of Energy as an official home, so we can actually train students or test students in our mock house. We have a 3,000-gallon stormwater harvesting system.
Rainwater. Cars, yeah.
We have full of photo thermal solar arrays on the roof that we use to heat our hot water, which is another program we teach. We have a full heater lab with over 20 units, ranging from furnaces, oil, gas, electric, every kind of unit you could imagine that you would run into under this field.
So basically, what you did is you developed this critical mass and started expanding it with the help of foundation money, which is great. It's an awesome approach. And then once you developed the critical mass, people started recognizing you as the go-to place. And in your presentation, it seems like you've established yourself as the go-to training place for a number of certifications. And of course, for an environmental program, it might be environmental certifications, but it could include lead, and you've included energy conservation, and you brought in the weatherization. So,
sure. And like I said, we do lead safety, the DOE lead safety and the EPA lead safety, as well as the RRP and lead dust sampling technician. As mentioned, we run Haslopper. We could do more. We'd like to do more. We are actually geographically located in the central hub of the scrap recycling industry for the region. I think within 3 miles, there are 500 recycling companies. So we're uniquely positioned to really expand, and that really is one of our goals in the near future, is to offer more environmental training. We do a lot of environmental education, but we haven't really been able to break through in the training department yet.
And contractors, we maintain close relationships with contractors, because like we'll frequently do contractor briefings. Just tell people kind of what's on the horizon in terms of utility programs or legislation that might affect their businesses. And then they, in turn, tell us, I need EPA lead, I need this, I need that. One contractor said to us, every time I put a shovel in the ground, I hit an underground storage tank that nobody knows about. So they educate us about what they need you know, and what they encounter every day. And then we try to go after support to deliver that.
Right.
And if you've got an EPA job training program, you're training, say, people under an EPA program, it's just as easily to do incumbent training for a fee to help increase your sustainability. So in that case, it's just a different program, but under the same roof to improve your leverage.
I haven't actually even thought about that.
You know, we do try to keep this has been such an interesting conversation. We try to keep these to 30 minutes, I'm hoping it's okay if any of the participants can write to you or call you. Would that be all right if they do have questions?
Please feel free. We've done technical assistance in New Jersey, Baltimore, North Carolina, Puerto Rico. I'm really pushing hard for Brazil. They came and visited, but still waiting for the contract to show up.
We may have some grantees that need some BPI assistance in terms of because some of the job training programs do go into the BPI training program.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we'd be glad to help.
Absolutely.
Great.
How can you get a contact?
I'm sure Mike and Glow will
put their contact information in there. You'll be getting a post-session notes in the next day or so. And we'll have their contact information. You can contact them direct. That'd be great. Well, listen, thanks, Pam and Scott. It has been great, and
a different
perspective on really an incredible training program. Good luck, and hope to keep you on these programs as mentors in our TLC.
We appreciate the time, hopefully look forward to working together.
Okay. We'll see you all next week, or the 21st. And
thanks, everyone.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Everybody.
Bye.